some of my songs I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Whiskey Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Today is Tuesday, September 21st, 2010. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43, and I'm joined by my co-host, Ray Dieter from the DBA Bars. Welcome, Ray. How are you, buddy?
Hey, Jimmy. I've had a really, really bad day today. I started drinking early, Jimmy.
Well, did you have liquids of interest last night at
last
DBA
night,
Bar?
Yeah, we had Irish whiskey last night, plus we watched the Saints kick ass over San Francisco. And this morning I woke up and had to go to a meeting with my accountant. And it was,
Real stories of bars.
I don't even want to talk about it.
Well, Beer Sessions Radio is sponsored by GreatBrewers.com, so you don't have to hear about our own personal problems every day. GreatBrewers.com is a culmination of information from passionate beer wholesalers who serve over 50,000 beer retailers in 14 states. Be the first to know about new beer releases and where to find them. Test your beer knowledge with the Great Beer Tests, and check out the events calendar on GreatBrewers.com. We're also supported by the people at the Good Beer Seal, an association of 27 New York City bars, GoodBeerSeal.com. We've got some really great guests tonight. Two of them in particular, Sam Merritt, who is here to talk about some New York Craft Beer Week events, and a very special New York area brewer, Scott Ficarro from Captain Lawrence. Sam, how are you?
Hey, good, Jimmy. How are you?
It's good to have you on the show.
Yeah, it's good to be a guest this time.
We miss you.
I miss you guys. It's been quite busy out there in the civilization of beer.
I've heard that you've got some really cool beer events planned.
Got some great events for Craft Beer Week, and just celebrated the fourth anniversary of Civilization of Beer on Sunday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been 4 years of fun and sometimes not so much fun,
but we really want to hear about your personal problems.
New York City Craft Beer Week, we're participating in the Brewer's Choice event, which you're putting on, Jimmy, on the 30th, on that Thursday, and then we have a great dinner set up at Jimmy's 43 featuring Nano and Nomad breweries from around the area, and that's getting a lot of interest, and it should be really, really good. It's benefiting the Grange out in Brooklyn.
Yeah, the Brooklyn farm. Grange, the rooftop garden. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Ben Flanner, yeah.
So it should be a great event, and this is the first time I'm participating in New York City Craft Beer Week. I've usually laid pretty low, but I'm pretty excited about this year.
Well, some of the Nano breweries that you've chosen for the dinner, I've never heard of before.
Yeah, Blind Bat Brewing Company out of Centerport, Long Island. One-man show out there. A good guy named Paul. He was featured in an article I wrote for Sierra Magazine as being a very green brewery, because beer is very heavy, and if you don't take it very far, that's a key component of the carbon footprint. So we put in a Nano brewery, Barrier Brewing Company from the South Shore out down in Queens, and then we have our Greenport Harbor friends from out on the North Fork, and then Pretty Things, which is of course our Nomad brewery, is coming with a beautiful beer. So really small breweries, but super beer, and we're looking forward to exposing them to some people with your help.
It's exciting. It's not too many people have heard of those breweries, but we've got a lot of writers coming. Writers from Time Out, Edible East End just did a featured piece on the small breweries of Long Island, and it's really catching on. Scott, what do you think about this movement, Nano breweries?
I think it's great. It's exciting. It's definitely shows that people are willing to take one little step above home brewing and kind of move out there and actually put their beers out there for sale, and it's great. I mean, I wish I would have done it sooner. I would have started as a nano brewery. I would have gotten out there quicker.
So what kind of brewer are you now? You're not a nano,
I guess we're a micro.
Micro? Or a macro or a nano or...
I don't think we're a macro just yet.
you're a macro in here.
You're a bureau brewery.
Just happy to be making beer, to be honest with you.
Right.
It's great, though.
You're up in Pleasantville, New York.
We are. We're right in the middle of Westchester County.
You've got a rabid local following, I hear.
Yeah, we've been pretty fortunate. I mean, Westchester really didn't have, a brewery to call its own. So we kind of, set up shop and been very fortunate. People have enjoyed the beers we're making.
You make great beer. I mean, that's what it comes down
thank
to.
You.
If you made shitty beer, nobody'd care.
Yeah, so I guess we're lucky. I like to say people like to drink the beer I like to drink because I'm making beer that I want to drink.
What beer are we drinking now?
Ah, a little Golden Delicious. So I figured we'd bring something, you know, fairly new. It's a strong one.
Is that an apple reference, Golden Delicious?
It's aged in apple brandy barrels.
Ah.
And so actually from our good friends down at Laird's in New Jersey.
Oh, right.
Who I believe have distiller's license number one after mm-hmm. Prohibition.
Yes.
And we've been fortunate to get some of their barrels, and we're aging, I guess, our American Triple, the extra gold in it. So it's kind of a hybrid style. I figured I'd bring something that's got a little...
Very little
interesting story behind it. Yeah, it's definitely a
How
fun
strong
one.
Is it? What's the...
Well, the base beer goes in about 9.5, 10, and then, you know, whatever we suck out of the barrels is another question, but it's I'd say 10 plus.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm not tasting any of the alcohol in it. There's a little bit of a hit to it, but not 10 plus.
Yeah, no, it's smooth. It's got the nice wood character.
What kind
nice
of hops are in here?
The original, it was probably bittered with Simcoe and Crystal. Oh, I'm sorry. What am I saying? It's the Extra Gold. Amarillo, Simcoe, okay. And Cascade.
And how long is it in the Applewood?
6 to 8 months.
Wow, that long.
Yeah, we've actually, the first batch we ever made, we let it sit about a year. And that came out like rocket fuel. It soaked a little too much out of the wood. And then the second batch we made, we only put it in there about 3 months, and that wasn't quite enough.
So when you say it soaked stuff out of the wood, it means the actual... apple brandy or whatever was in there, the alcohol that was in the wood is actually leached into the beer that you bottle?
Yeah, we're getting the barrels, we're getting them wet. They dump them, and then
right, so you're not recharring them or anything like that?
No,
you're
not
just
doing
dumping your beer into this.
It's a great, exactly. It's a great way to infuse, you know,
yeah.
The bourbon barrels, they just suck the liquor right out of it, and you know, it's the old Boilermaker, but on a very sophisticated level.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, I, to be honest with you, I don't know exactly how much we get out, but I definitely... believe that there is enough to you know, give you a nice flavor.
Definitely. I wish I said that. I wish I would notice the apple note to it. Now that you said it, I smell it. It's like that happens all the time. It's like, oh yeah, what do you note?
Sure.
What do you check out in this beer? It's like, do you smell coconuts and, you know, and Oreo cookies? Like, now that you mentioned it, yeah, there's Oreo cookies in here.
Sure.
But now I'm getting apples, but I didn't before you mentioned that.
What guides you? I mean, talking about these flavors. What guides you when you're making beer?
Oh geez. I guess I try to think about, you know, the flavors that I want to get in the final product, and then you go backwards from there. So, you know, this one was, when we first opened up, I was just kind of looking for new and exciting things to do that I couldn't do as a home brewer. I always loved the idea of aging beer in wood, but as a home brewer, it's a lot tougher because it's not easy to fill a 60-gallon barrel, and if you're, you know, forget finding an apple brandy barrel to fill. So I kind of went crazy right off the bat when we opened up, and I finally, you know, I had kind of creative license to do whatever I wanted, and so I searched as many different barrel sources as I could find, and these guys popped up. They're a drive, you know, hour and a half drive from the brewery. I called them up. They sold me some barrels, and the beer was born. And we had already been making the extra gold, and so I thought that was the perfect beer to actually put in this barrel because it's a full-bodied beer, but it's still light enough that the apples kind of shine through.
Right, it's very good.
Yeah, it's a nice beer. What else did you bring today?
What else? So I kind of brought some, you know, some different styles. We have traditional St. Vincent's Double, which kind of... we model after a Belgian-style double. You know, not really an American twist on this one. It's pretty much straightforward. We're using Belgian candy syrup from Belgium, the beet syrup. An imported Belgian strain of yeast. There we go. Let me get a glass.
That's a sound that you're never supposed to hear.
Perfect.
You're not supposed to touch it.
Wow. Let's do some more. Let's make a toast on air. Let's
cheers.
We
like hearing that.
Scott Ficarro.
Cheers.
Our local boy.
Cheers to Captain
making
Lawrence.
Making good.
Your success. So, Scott, you started really early in life as a brewer. Can you tell us a little bit about your very beginning? Because I think it's one of my favorite stories in beer. How old were you when you went to school?
Well, I started. I mean, I was 17. I went over to my friend's house after school one day, junior year in high school, and his dad was making beer on the stove. And I asked him if he'd show me how to do it. He said, go ask your parents, and if they say yes, you know, I'll teach you how to make beer. And clearly my parents weren't paying attention because they were like, oh, yeah, go learn how to make beer. And I came home, you know, a month and a half later with my first batch. It was Cranberry Celebration Ale out of, I think, Charlie Papazian's New Complete Joy of Homebrewing.
Love that book.
Yeah. And that was kind of the beginning, you know, and from there, you know, I ended up completing my studies at UC Davis, got my degree in fermentation science, and then up the road to Sierra Nevada to work for 2.5 years, which without a doubt, is the most beautiful brewery I've ever stepped foot in. So if you get a chance, go
visit.
Chico,
right?
Oh, yeah. It's gorgeous.
What do you like about it?
I mean, it's without a doubt the cleanest brewery I've ever been in. But, you know, just it's a cathedral to beer, you know. They do a lot of creative things. They have, you know, it's a beautiful place.
I love the fact that we're getting a lot of the new the different beers from Sierra Nevada now. For a while, we got the Pale Ale. Maybe we got Bigfoot.
Sure.
Maybe we got
the
brown
really
ale.
Mixing it up.
Yeah, now they're sending out a lot of great... The Harvest beer from Sierra is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Their Summer Ale is one of the great ones, too.
Yeah, no, they're getting really creative, and it's great.
I guess since they expanded, they can send this stuff to the East Coast, which is that's very lucky.
Absolutely.
Scott, a question about how you run your brewery. I mean, you're the head brewer. Does that mean you're in charge of all brewery operations? You know, because there's different there's brewers that are traveling the world, and there's brewers that are making beer, and brewers that are fixing hoses. And
yeah, I mean, I'm not so much, you know, on the ground floor mashing in anymore as I was when we began. You know, the funny thing is, you grow as a business, there's actually becomes a business you have to run, and it's not quite as fun as making beer, but it's definitely interesting.
Don't get me started.
I'm in the brewery every day. I mean, I do travel on occasion. I just got back from the GABF. I mean, as far as recipe formulation and trying to fix things that break, you know, I do my best to do a little bit of everything.
I had heard that you were the guy that fixes the hoses. That's why I brought it as a compliment from some of your distributors.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely in there tinkering with things, without a doubt. I mean, you know, when we started, I was doing everything from brewing to packaging to delivering. And, you know, we've been fortunate that we've, you know, grown to the point where now I have other people doing, you know, the distributing and the delivering and all that.
Let me put you, Chuck is one of our regular guests, and Chuck Duffney is a home brewer. Dieseldrafts.com is his website. He's going to ask you a question because he's been a home brewer and he's got some good training. Sweet. And he's been dying to ask you a question. So.
Yeah, thanks. It's good to be back in New York, but it's great to be back on your show, Jimmy. I appreciate the invite back. Well, we were drinking this first beer, the Golden Delicious. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you aged it in these apple brandy barrels for 6 to 8 months. Do you do any blending out of that? Do you blend back with like your regular golden ale, or do you just take it straight out of the barrels and bottle it?
No, this beer is just 100% barrel aged. We're going to be doing this beer on a much more regular basis now that we've gotten a good supply of the barrels. So I'm not going to say that we won't do that going forward. We're going to just keep kind of trying to develop the flavor. But as it stands and as we've done it to this point, it's 100% out of the barrels.
It's delicious, man. I'm getting nice vanilla notes out of this.
Thank you. Yeah, it's the barrels still have some, you know, love to give, even after being used for bourbon and then for apple brandy. But they still develop a lot of flavor.
There's bourbon in there, too?
Well, the original, the barrels that are used.
It's first-filled bourbon.
First-filled bourbon. Okay. Then they buy them used.
Yep.
And then they fill them with apple brandy, and then we get them.
The whole cooperage story from Kentucky is amazing because it's you can't call it bourbon unless it's a first filled or sorry.
Yeah, you're right.
It's got to be American white oak brand new barrels, yeah. And then so that the cooperage goes all around the world.
Sure.
It goes to you guys. It goes to France. It goes to Scotland.
Thank God they don't just throw them out too.
Yeah. It's an industry.
It's an amazing process. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, we're gonna take a little break here. We'll be back with some really cool guests on Beer Sessions Radio.
Jones and Big John Talley had a big crap game going back in the alley, and I kept rolling them seven and winning all them pots. My luck was so good I could do no wrong. I just kept on rolling and controlling them bones. Finally they just threw up their hand and said, when you hot, you hot. I said, yeah. When you're hot, you're hot. When you're not, you're not. Put all the money in and let it roll again. Just getting ready to roll them again when I heard something behind me. I turned around and there was a big old cop. He said, hello, boy. Then he gave us a grin and said, look like I'm gonna have to haul y'all in and keep all that money for evidence. I said, well, son, when you hot, you hot.
He said, yeah, when you're hot, you're hot. When you're not, you're not.
You can explain it all down at City Hall. I said, yeah,
when you're hot, hot,
you're hot. Took us into court, I couldn't believe my eyes. The judge was a fishing buddy that I recognized. I said, hey, judge, old buddy, old man.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carbone with Ray Dieter. and our very special guests, Scott Ficarro and Sam Merritt. And we got a call-in guest coming in, Andy Crouch. He's an author of Great American Craft Beer. We're going to give him a little razzing. We're going to ask him some questions because his book has been fairly provocative for some people. Most of all, that he's actually divided beers into styles. What do you think about that? This, you know, we make beer. We talk about beer. Do you think that beer should be divided into styles? Is that
you got to qualify it somehow? You got to qualify it. You got to call it something.
Sam,
I think you should learn all the basic styles and then keep them in the back of your head at some point, and then let people do whatever they want with the beer.
Then start making up shit.
Yeah, make up shit. You know, Crossing, for instance, what Rob Todd at Allagash making a black, a black Belgian style, which is a Belgian stout now, and
or a black IPA,
or the black IPA.
And don't get me started on that one.
Okay, but you know, it's good to sort of have that basis. But other than that, you know, people are going to be writing a lot of books about beer styles if that's what we're talking about.
So Andy Crouch, he recently released his book, Great American Craft Beer. It's designed as a guide to styles. He's written for Ale Street News, American Brewer, and writes the monthly unfiltered column for Beer Advocate magazine. I'm looking at his section here, Style and Flavor of Beer. He's got easy drinkers, cool and refreshing, mellow and malty, robust and rich, heavenly hoppy, dark and roasty, lush and fruity, nightcaps and nurses, funky flavors, and extreme tastes.
Nightcaps and nurses?
Yeah, nightcaps
and
nurses.
Oh, yeah. I like that one.
So, Andy, how are you?
Doing pretty good. How are you guys doing today?
Good. This is Jimmy, and I'm here with Ray Dieter.
Hey, Andy.
Hey, Andy.
How you doing, Ray?
Great. So what the heck is craft beer anyways?
Yeah, that's really one of the questions we get to in this book. And, when I was writing the book, I was trying to design it with the idea, you know, that it says in the back cover that there's a beer out there for everyone. And, you know, there's beer out there for, you know, hardcore beer geeks, but also for, you know, for people who are a little bit new to beer. So this is trying to sort of bridge the gap between those two, you know, very divided audiences, trying to give each of them, you know, a little bit to take home.
Well, there's beer for nurses too, huh?
Well, yeah, you can have your nightcaps and nurses with the nurses, I guess.
I do like the way that you split them up, though, Andy, because, you know, if you just split things up by country, then you're missing out on a whole thing from another place. If you just say, oh, you know, English IPA or something, there are very similar tasting beers all over the place, but they might be called something different in style. So split it up into flavor profiles and things like that, which is much more important than calling it something like just an old beer style, right?
I think it makes things a lot more approachable. And I think one of the problems that perhaps we see in the world of wine is that, you know, a lot of times people aren't really in touch with what all the varietals mean and all the different, you know, variations and appellations. You know, when it comes to beer, we sometimes can fall prey to that as well. Instead of, you know, when we get these hyper detailed, ordinary bitter, English style, you know, extra special bitter, people don't really understand what that's about. And so when I do tastings and I, you know, talk to people, what they know is flavor. They know what they like to taste. They know what they like to smell. And so that's what this book does. At its core, it breaks these down into, you know, very recognizable, understandable categories. You know, people, you know, who drink coffee every day know that they like roasted flavors, but to their minds, they look at a dark beer or they hear the words porter and stout and their eyes either glaze over or they get this shriek of horror that seems to come out of them.
I got a question for you, Andy. This is Ray from DBA. What is the difference between a porter and a stout?
That is a good question. And, you know, one of the fun things about becoming a beer writer, especially in the last 5 years
or so. Is evading that question?
What's that?
Is evading that question?
No, not evading it.
According to who? That's the question.
I think you definitely have to have a little bit of context. When it comes to history and beer styles, you know, that is one of the most dangerous terrains that a beer writer can enter into. You know, we always, for the last, you know, 20 years or so, Michael Jackson coming forward, thought that we understood what the history of India Pale Ale was, only to learn, you know, with a couple of enterprising British beer writers in the last 5 years or so, that we really don't know anything about these styles. And what we thought we knew was totally legend and false.
Absolutely.
So the problems with trying to, you know, figure out the histories of porters and stouts is that it certainly can't be fit into a simple sound bite, and history goes back so far and is so convoluted that it's difficult.
So you're evading the question.
It's great. I would evade it the same way if I could keep up, but he's absolutely right. It's, you know, the history of style and history itself can be argued every which way, and bottom line is we're not living in history. It's like, what is the beer going to taste like to me now?
Right.
And let's get ourselves together. It's like, you know, you mentioned the coffee, and in my classes I say, okay, what kind of coffee do you like, and how do you like it? Do you like cream and sugar?
Right.
And do you put Tabasco on your eggs? Because if you do, you probably like IPA. And that's where it comes down. That's where the rubber hits the road, you know?
Yeah, and I think when we start looking at something just like,
ones,
the, just like the history of Porter, you know, there's the old three threads myth when it comes to Porter, and then there's, you know, did Porter give rise to Stout, or
right.
did Stout give mm-hmm. rise to Porter? And, you know, I the more I read about these things, the less I know. So I think, like, you
that's
know,
a great
the less
answer
I
right
understand.
There.
So I think what it comes down to is I know flavor, I know what people, you know, I know what they like to drink, and I think our modern, when it comes to trying to figure out styles, I think what people think of the, you know, think these styles represent in the modern day era, and I know this is a controversial thought, is sometimes a lot more important than what historically they once were, because like, you take a style like mild, and everyone just assumed that was a...
Mild, fine, let's start that can of worms.
No, we won't go too far into it, but it just, you know, it's one of those things that we always thought meant low alcohol, and it actually meant young beer, and sometimes very strong beer.
And you know what? I also heard that it was the beer that was all the beers from the taps combined was a cold and mild. Also, a lot of
pubs. And the story there, you know, is that was also what Bock was. Obviously, the beer from the, you know, the bottom of the tank. All the history that we think we know, you know, it doesn't really do us much good, and it turns out to be false in a lot of cases. So I think we stick with what we know. We stick with flavor, and
okay,
we're on
so
much safer
ground. I just want to review real quickly. We have no idea what the difference between Porter and Stout is. Do it.
I'm taking the PhD in this
I'm studying for the Master Cicerone right now, which I'm taking next month.
Okay,
and so I've been doing a lot of reading about Porter and Stout, and I've also been working with the Guinness brand a little bit on the launch of the Foreign Extra Stout in this mm-hmm. country.
Right,
which
I love that stuff.
Happening in a couple of weeks. So it's generally put out there that the porter was the precursor to the
right.
stout, and that the stout was a richer, not necessarily lower alcohol, but a richer and more full-bodied porter. Mm-hmm. So it was extra stout porter first, and then it became stout. And, you know, if you look at some of the porters from Finland, like Snibrikov, qualifies as
love
an imperial stout in terms of its profile of alcohol.
Now imperial stout's being added to the mix. Okay.
Right. So those can be really big porters right. or they can be a stout. And
do we have imperial porters out there?
One of the things I would note as well, though, is that I just saw a report last week from one of these sort of beer modern day British beer historians talking about pale stout. You know, that he's
right.
got brewing records that show
pale
that stout.
Stout.
Oh, that
yes.
stout wasn't always dark.
Yeah,
I mean that's like a dark IPA, right?
Black IPA.
But yeah, it turns everything that we thought we knew sort of on its head when you actually have historical records to back up what you're saying.
Andy, is this a tough panel of experts for you?
No, it's good. You know, I usually do a lot of media for sort of more of general audiences, and so I'm more than happy to get down into the nitty gritty of the sort of geek talk here.
Really liked your article about the Great American Beer Festival there, and for many reasons, I'm glad I didn't go, and for other reasons, I'm not. So I thank you for that.
Yeah, that's sort of
save me
sort
a plane ticket.
That's sort of blown up today, and I don't want to discourage people from going to the GABF. I've gone for almost 15 years now since I turned 21, and I've really, you know, loved the time I've gone there. It's taught me so much about beer, and you know what I'm doing is sort of, you know, criticizing or critiquing a very small part of it that sort of takes away from a little bit of the experience. But overall, I think the Brewers Association does a fantastic job with that event. I just think that, you know, when it comes down to the actual beer itself and trying to promote craft beer and flavors, I think we can all do a better job.
I think we should have a reading room at every beer festival, and people should have to check out books and bring them back. You know?
Yeah, and that would be great. And I was signing books there, so there are definitely a bunch of books available. And they're
Andy.
You know,
on another note, were there any new breweries or beers that you really liked?
I got in touch with a lot of old favorites, and then, you know, I'm a particularly big fan of lager beer, so I was pretty much trying to try every Pilsner that I saw on the floor. But there's a great brewery in Omaha, Nebraska, Upstream, that, you know, doesn't distribute anywhere close to where I live in Boston. So they actually do make a lot of a lot of sour beer that, you know, you always hear the big names about Port Brewing and Russian River, and these are great brewers, but, you know, you see a small town brewer in Nebraska making some of the world's, you know, highest quality sour beers, and I try to get in touch with those. I then was also drinking beer from very small breweries in Washington State and across the country. So I try to tend to stay away from the big names and head towards, you know, some of the smaller guys to check out what they're doing.
That's Andy Scott Vicaro from Captain Lawrence Brewery.
How you doing?
He's
Andy?
Here with us, and he was at the GABF.
I was.
As well.
It was definitely an interesting time. It's my fourth year. I can't say I've done it as many times as you have, but it was definitely a treat.
So let me turn this on its head a little bit. Scott, I've been hearing from brewers and writers all day about the Great American Beer Festival and their thoughts. Can you tell me whether or not you attended any of the sessions and if your attendance would have been more or less, you know, if circumstances had been different?
Oh, geez. I mean, I did attend most of the sessions, except for the Saturday night session. I did bow out of that one. But, I went to all of them. I can't say I stood behind the booth the entire time. I did go out and enjoy myself and actually, you know, try the brewers that I don't get to see and try on a regular basis. So I go at it in two ways. You know, I kind of go at it to help, you know, promote our brewery and kind of spread the word about our beers. And then I also go out there to have a good time and try some of the beers that I've been reading about and I haven't had a chance to try myself. But, you know, I enjoy myself there. It does get a little out of hand at some points, but it's
It's supposed to get out of hand.
Sure. Understandable.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's raise our glass to our special guest, Andy.
Andy.
All right.
You're right.
Thanks for coming on.
Just for reference, Andy, I didn't read your article about the GABF. What was the really, like, in a two-sentence or three-sentence context, what was your...
You know, my concern was that it sort of, you know, boys will be boys and girls will be girls, as my friend Harry Schumacher, the beer writer, you know, told me today. But, you know, when it comes down to these fests, I think that, you know, we can put a little bit more emphasis on education just simply by and promoting good craft beer, just by having a brewery representative at each of the booths so that we don't have to volunteers who have never heard of the brewery or the beers, you know, telling us things like, these three beers aren't very good. This one's okay.
You might as well be in a gas station, Andy?
Right, and those are the people telling the public about your brand.
That makes a lot of sense, Andy. Makes a lot of sense. I got one more question, too. Was that Anheuser-Busch truck out front with the beer school? Was it parked out there?
Oh, I didn't happen to see that this year. So that wasn't around.
I think that's one of those food trucks now on the Food Network.
Selling tacos?
Well, let's get before we take a break. There's an email question. We get email questions every week. Eddie in Poughkeepsie, he emailed a question, and you can interpret it the way you want because I don't quite understand it. But it says, "Why do popular beers have a screw top, while many import and craft beers require a bottle opener?"
That's a good question. I think I know that there are certain countries that do bottles a certain way. They have returnables that are used all across the entire country in sort of a uniform system, so that brewers in Germany can collect bottles from other people, refill them. So I think that's why they tend to go towards uniformity. As to the difference between screw tops and ones that you can pry off, I think that it's generally accepted in the industry that the ones that you pry off hold a better seal, and I know there's some debate. Hold a better seal, and so therefore prevent oxygen from getting into the top. And I know Sierra Nevada, after a long internal debate, within the last 2 years, has gone from the old screw top to the ones that you pry off. So I think Sierra Nevada is always a pretty good industry example to follow.
All right,
it's a conspiracy from the bottle opener makers.
Oh, there's that too, I'm sure.
Scott, what do you use?
Do you
use pop-offs?
We're using pop-offs, to be honest with you, just because all the bottles that I buy to use don't come with a screw-off. So I've never actually really looked into it. As far as that email is concerned, I guess he's right. All the good beers, all the pop-tops, that's just what I've been used to
drinking. There you go. Perfect. You're in, Scott. You're in.
All right. Well, Andy, thanks so much. Everyone, check out his book, Great American Craft Beer, Andy Crouch. We're going to take another little break here. Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network.
My daddy was a family baseman. My mom was an engineer.
Back on Beer Sessions Radio, sponsored by GreatBrewers.com, one of our favorite sites for beer information. If you love beer, you love GreatBrewers.com. So we just had Andy Crouch on, the author of Great American Craft Beer, and we got Scott Ficarra, but we also have some really cool guests, too. We have some homebrewers. We had Chuck Duffney from DieselDrafts.com, and we have Sessa Kobe Smith, who's a homebrewer and beer lover. An excerpt from her website is, "I'm not an expert, but I am a beginner brewer, and being a native of the Northwest, you get an appreciation for the handcrafted beer." How are you, Sessa?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Thanks for having me on here.
Yeah. What do you think about having some of Scott Ficarra's beers?
It's awesome. I feel like coming from the Northwest, and I've been here in New York for 7 years, that craft brewery was really missing for me and when I first came here. And so having something like Captain Lawrence is really just makes my day. I just recently had his pale ale, and it was beautiful perfection. I loved it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. I feel like I'm really excited about where New York is coming into the beer and really knowing it and really appreciating it.
We're getting an identity too. It's a great thing. We're not just guys like Scott, guys like Kelly, Kelso. I mean, people are making some really good beer now in New York. Yeah. And it's not just a copy of what's happening in the Northwest. It's not just, your English-style crap. Not crap. English-style beer is great. I love it.
Yeah.
And we're coming into our own, finally. It's taken a long time. We opened up DBA in 1994, and it was like, it wasn't a beer wasteland exactly. There's great stuff available. But now it's like, there is an identity, and I'm really
excited. What's really funny is that In our city, so many things have changed, and now even Whole Foods has one of the biggest beer stores around. Yeah. Do we have a calling guest, Bree? Hi, is this a calling guest?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, this is Andrew from Whole Foods. How you doing?
Oh, Andrew from Whole Foods. How are you?
Good. What a coincidence.
I was just thinking about Whole Foods and the beer store there.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
So what brings you to call in our little radio show?
Well, next week is Craft Beer Week, and we're doing a few kind of special things in the beer room at Bowery. We've got Oscar Blues for the entire week, and on Friday we're doing a tasting with them, along with a chef from Palo Santo in Park Slope.
Oh, Jacques, he's awesome.
Yeah, it should be really good.
Is he going to come and make his little hand-pressed tortillas for you guys?
I hope so. He's coming on Wednesday, and he's going to get inspired by his shopping, but it should be good.
All right, Palo Santo and Whole Foods and Craft Brew Week. So Oscar Blues Growler, which Oscar Blues will you be serving? Do you know?
We pretty much have them all. We've got their Dale's Pale Ale. We have the Gubna.
The Gubna is crazy.
Yeah, it's insane.
It's
a crazy beer.
We're going to have that. Their Pilsner. We're going to have a few specialty cakes for them. We're going to have their oaked Imperial Stout, the 1050. We're going to have an oaked Pilsner from them. And then I think we're also going to have their barley wine, which I'm pretty excited to try.
You guys have really, really been stepping it up in terms of craft beer. Are you hosting some type of homebrew competition right now?
Yeah, we are actually with Kelso. We're taking entries until October 3rd, and the winner that's going to be judged independently is going to be able to brew their beer with Kelso and have that on draft at Whole Foods and I think a few bars too.
Wow, that sounds really cool. Do you ever serve any of the Captain Lawrence beers? Because we got Scott Vaccaro here, the brewer from Captain Lawrence.
Yeah, absolutely. We try to always have some kegs of Captain Lawrence on hand. We have their brown ale right now and their Imperial IPA.
Excellent.
Always a good seller.
Scott's going to tell you about some new beers that he has coming out soon.
Great.
Oh, hey. I guess I am. We got the Golden Delicious coming to a store near you very soon. We actually had 15 Whole Foods team members up at the brewery this afternoon. That's why I was late to the radio show. I was showing them around up there. And
I thought it was traffic.
Oh, traffic, people whatever. From Whole Foods, you know, a little bit of both. But we hopefully we'll come out with some new bottled stuff in the real near future. But we'll have the Smoke from the Oak series coming up in November.
Okay.
We're doing the Imperial Smoke Porter aged in wine barrel. Rum and apple brandy all at once.
Okay.
Wow.
Why did Whole Foods go all out and open that great beer store a few years ago?
It just kind of happened. I think, one of the challenges in New York is that, you know, grocery stores can't carry wine. So we just kind of went crazy with the beer. We had some really passionate team members that really kind of took the reins, and Whole Foods as a corporation just kind of let them do it. So,
what about the community board? Was that an issue?
It was a little bit, yeah. I think with getting wine, but it's worked out great for us. I mean, any beer enthusiasts, they really have a good place to go in the Lower East Side and find some really great craft beer.
Well, they can go to DBA, which is not far away from Whole Foods, by the way.
I send people there all the time.
No, I appreciate that.
I'll tell you, there's a secret Whole Foods and Good Beer Silk collaboration. Actually, we've been helping out with the homebrew competition.
Right.
And it's pretty cool. We knew about it from the beginning that Kelso was going to work with you guys, and the winner was going to get to make a Kelso beer. And I know some of us, I know that Jimmy's number 43 will be serving that beer. We're kind of excited about it.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Yeah. And we got here Sam Merritt.
It's not a secret anymore. I want to serve some of that beer too at my house.
Yeah, no, that's the way to do it. And we've got Chuck. We've got Chuck and Cesar here. Chuck, what beer would you submit to the homebrew competition at Whole Foods?
Well, I just got back from, you know, a month on the road, but I have this beer that I brewed originally for my friends coming from Bavaria to visit. I brewed them an American brown ale. My friend, she was telling me that she thinks Helles is a little too bitter, which is known as the sweetest of the light lagers. So I've stepped it back. I used a high mash temperature. I used a yeast that's known to leave a sweeter beer. Stepped back on the hops. So it's more of a malty sort of sweet interpretation of American brown ale, but I'm considering for this homebrew competition throwing a little hops in there to dry hop
it. So are you going to submit an entry at Whole Foods?
Calling me out right now, huh?
Come on. Possibly, you only have another week or so.
Yeah, I know. Hopefully I'll be able to get a couple of beers in a bottle and get it sent in, yes.
All right. Chuck, you're a great home brewer. You've studied brewing.
Yes.
You're sitting here with a great brewer like Scott Vaccaro. Do you have any ambitions of working at a commercial brewery or at a craft brewer?
Absolutely.
Or opening your own brewery?
All of the above. I love beer. I love being involved in the making of beer, and I love how it makes people come together and have good times. So.
That's great.
But the one thing I feel like is missing, though, in New York is a brew pub. I mean, I know we have Heartland Brewery, but do you know what I'm saying? There's not enough brew pubs that are just like small batches that are just, and you have like great food come together. I mean, do you feel like that was something you could do here?
That's something that I'm trying to hopefully do myself. I live up in Harlem, and it's sort of my home neighborhood. So hopefully, you'll be buying some diesel drafts in the next year or so up in Harlem.
Is that something that people do more in the Northwest?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, pubs. You go to Portland and every corner is a brew pub, so you can't really go wrong.
I think it's got to do with the real estate prices and the licensing issues. I mean, it's a real tough road to hoe to actually open a brew pub and then actually pay the rent, because it's a long time to get it going.
It's multiple licenses, too.
You have to have
a producer's license, also a retailer's license, and if you want to sell to other bars, it's the third distributor's license. Lawyers can muck things up quite a bit.
It's really too bad, because I feel like that whole artisan effect that's really starting to come in with like coffee and cheese and like breweries, or I feel like the brewing process, it's kind of a little slow coming because of these issues that I feel like are really kind of arbitrary.
Let's tear down the wall and change everything.
Yeah.
Let's rip down the law. You know, it's like let's petition the state liquor authority and really piss them off and change
let's
everything.
Let's talk a little bit more about Craft Beer Week.
Okay.
And, we got Whole Foods and we got... You just
Ray
had a,
fired up.
There. I want to hear about Ray's event. Ray?
Ray,
you just had
I'm
a,
Ray.
A cask festival.
We just had a very successful cask festival. We burned through like 18 casks. We were done by like noon on Sunday. It was amazing. It was really successful. Thank you, everybody that came out to it. We had some great whiskeys and beers.
So you had the Williams. It was the Williamsburg Cask.
Williamsburg, the third Williamsburg Cask Festival, third annual of this year.
Do you have any special events planned for Craft Beer Week next week?
Yes, we do. We're having a beer and cheese pairing with Pretty Things on Tuesday the 28th. Tuesday the 28th, I think it is. And yeah, we got a bunch of stuff going on. Just good beer. As we do every Monday, liquids of interest next. Monday is going to be local beer. Hopefully, I'll have some Scotch beer on hand for that. And yeah, we got a bunch of stuff going
and
on.
And here's we have a great event coming up that a bunch of us are working on, including the Beer Sessions radio team. And if the Whole Foods guys, if you're still on there, please, you're invited to come. It's right. called New York City Brewer's Choice. It's September 30th at City Winery. Scott Vaccaro will be there with the Captain Lawrence team. You may not know it, but he's going to be there.
I'm looking forward to that.
We got Sam Merritt doing some sommelier beer pairings. Ray Dieter is going to be one of the honored guests as a Beer Sessions host. There'll be some great food, and we've got some really cool brewers. We put the word out there, and Greg Hall from Goose Island is going to do a keynote speaking. We have Ballast Point coming from California, a bunch of the Northeast regional brewers. It's going to be a really, really great event, an intimate kind of VIP setting. So it'll be Ooh. One of the featured events of the week.
That's a great joint, too. City Winery is a fun place to go.
Yeah, but you guys totally, get in touch and we'll get you in, all right?
Great.
And if any of our listeners, this is something I can give away. And one time I offered a trip to San Diego, but that didn't come through. But I would say that the first four listeners who call in can get free tickets to New York City Brewer's Choice. And the number to call in is... What is the number, guys? It's 718-497-2128. 718-497-2128. I think the lines will stay open for another half hour. So if you want to get some tickets for Craft Beer Week, give us a call.
Can we get a free trip to Westchester, too?
Well, that could be fun. What is your
come on up to the brewery? Yeah,
yeah. Like, what's it like up there? Did you have a drinking area or a pub-like setting? Or
we have a tasting room. It's open every Friday 4 to 7, Saturday 12 to 6. We do free samples, and you know, you can walk around the brewery, take a tour, and if you like the beer we're serving, you can buy a growler and take it home.
What time's the pool open?
The pool, won't be open for another few more months. Okay. You know, you're gonna have to wait for that one. The volleyball court will be open sometime in March.
Wow, sounds like a fun place.
No, but we're a quick 5-minute walk from the Metro North
train
station.
Right near Metro North, right?
Right out of 45, 50 minutes out of Grand Central.
That could be a trip. We could do a Beer Sessions radio trip this winter.
That'd be great. I would love to. I've always wanted to go up there.
Should come up for our anniversary party in May.
We could do a broadcast live from the Whole Foods.
How many years will that be?
It'll be 5 years.
Five congratulations.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's actually a 5-year. We moved into the building 5 years ago, August, so. We didn't get up and running until January, and then nobody wants to have a party in January in New York. It's too cold, so we wait till May.
Well, let's raise our glasses to Scott Vaccaro. Thanks for coming in. Good Beer Seal Bar events coming up. Of course, we've got Brewer's Choice. Some other guys, Patrick from Rattle and Hum is behind the Get Real New York. That's this weekend, September 25th and 26th. It's a cask ale a festival with over 80 casks and many brewers and food. And I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com who have helped bring this podcast tonight. Beer Sessions Radio is also supported by the Good Beer Seal, goodbeerseal.com. You can also find Beer Sessions Radio on Facebook. Friend us, share beer thoughts, and talk about tonight's episode with other listeners. Thanks to Ray and our guests, Scott Vaccaro, Andy Crouch, Sam Merritt, Chuck Duffney, Sessa Kobe Smith, and to Andrew and Elizabeth from Whole Foods Market. I'm Jimmy Carboni, executive producer. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Brie O'Connor, and engineer Nat Wiener. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me